With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Cattle ranchers and dairies promote conservation efforts. I've got more in a California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News report. In a region dominated by vineyards, those who raise cattle for beef or milk production have looked into innovations and solutions outside the box to help keep their businesses viable. A Napa County cattle operation and a Sonoma County organic dairy shared how they do just that while also helping to preserve the land and natural resources around them. They offered an on-the-ground glimpse of their operation a few weeks ago as part of an educational tour hosted by the California Farm Bureau and the California Bountiful Foundation. This was all in part with funding from the California Cattle Council. Again, that was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now it's time for our show headlines. Legislation would create a permanent disaster relief program. Four elected officials from California introduced the Agricultural Emergency Relief Act to create a permanent USDA structure that would provide relief to farmers hurt by natural disasters. While Congress routinely provides disaster relief to farmers hurt by natural disasters, the lack of permanent program has resulted in multiple administrative changes that can cause confusion for farmers and result in unnecessary delays in implementation. Representative Mike Thompson of California was one of the co-sponsors. He says, quote, California and many other states have been hit hard by disasters. It's clear we need a permanent disaster relief program. This bill will help streamline the process for all farmers and growers to receive the relief they deserve. The legislation would formally authorize a program that already has funding from 2022 and 2023. It will require farmers who apply for relief payments to purchase crop insurance for 2 years after receiving that payment. The National Association of Farm Broadcasters contributed to that report, and now here's AgNet West Brian German with back-to-back agriculture news.
Dairy innovation grants are available from the Pacific Coast Coalition Dairy Business Initiative. The third cycle of the grant awards will make funding available to dairy producers and processors in California, Oregon, and Washington. A total of $300,000 is being made available for the current grant cycle. Virtual events on Thursday, August 10th and Friday, September 8th are being offered to assist with the application process. Applications up to $50,000 are being encouraged so that more businesses have the opportunity to benefit from the program. More than $4 million in grants were awarded to nearly 30 dairy companies back in June for projects ranging from equipment to expand product lines to marketing and business strategy development. Another round of dairy innovation grants will also be available in January 2024. At least $4.1 million will be available for operations in Arizona, California, Nevada, New Mexico, Oregon, and Washington. More information about the grant opportunities is available at dairypcc.net. The California Department of Food and Agriculture is taking applications for its new program to help support the organic sector. CDFA's Office of Environmental Farming and Innovation is accepting applications through September 15th for its Organic Transition Pilot Program. Block grants will be provided to organizations that support farmers and ranchers with acreage they plan to transition to organic. Awardees will assist with services like on-farm organic management consultation, business planning, and organic certification applications. Eligible organizations include nonprofits, resource conservation districts, and institutions of higher learning. Minimum awards for block grants are set at $500,000 with a maximum award of up to $2 million per applicant organization. Application materials and additional information can be found at cdfa.ca.gov/OEFI/OTP. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Why do we have GMOs? Actually, we've been modifying crops for thousands of years to prevent crop loss from pest and weather damage, to grow more food on less land, even to improve nutrition. Today, GMOs are developed for the same reasons. With genetic engineering, scientists can change and improve crops more easily and quickly. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, the focus continues on crafting the 2023 Farm Bill. California Congressman Jim Costa attended a Farm Bill listening session in Maine last week, where he and other members of Congress heard from several speakers, one of whom was Sarah Alexander, executive director of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association.
Over the last 50 years, we've helped transform the agricultural landscape in Maine. We've had nearly 400 farmers go through our USDA-funded beginning farmer programs, and more than 90% of them are still farming today, many of them right here in Maine. We're proud that we're one of the few states in the country where the average age of farms is going down, and we have one of the highest percentages of organic farms per capita, with more women in farming, more Black, Indigenous, people of color, and new American communities joining our agricultural sector every day. We have over 530 certified organic farms with over $60 million in annual sales. And the organic sector nationally has $63 billion in annual sales, with demand for organic products outpacing supply. Expanding funding for organic programs will benefit the health of our people, our environment, and our economy. In the upcoming Farm Bill, I urge you to include the Opportunities for Organic Act, which strengthens the organic certification cost share program and adds flexible funding to support organic transition and expansion, organic supply chain development, and technical assistance, with an emphasis on resources for producers and regions that haven't received a fair share of public investments in agriculture. Research is key to tackling many challenges facing farmers, and organic research benefits all. As we've heard, organic production practices are climate smart and can be adopted by all farmers to help improve healthy soil. Representative Pingree's Agricultural Resilience Act sets a bold vision of reaching net zero greenhouse gas emissions in agriculture by 2040. Organic agriculture is climate friendly and an important part of that goal. The bill also gives farmers greater access to seeds and animal breeds that are regionally adapted. Organic dairy farmers across the country are facing severe economic challenges. The Farm Bill should provide long-needed support for the organic dairy market. We know firsthand in Maine that a farmer safety net will mean that farmers aren't left holding the bag for PFAS contamination, and we urge you to include the Relief for Farmers Hit with PFAS Act, which helps farmers address PFAS contamination through testing, income replacement, remediation strategies, and research. Organic farming is climate smart, it's healthy for people and the environment. We hope you'll continue to invest in organic and conservation programs so that we can achieve true sustainability. Thank you for being here.
Another speaker was Eric Venturini, Executive Director of the Wild Blueberry Commission.
The Maine industry, like many ag sectors, is seeking a farm bill that helps to address our sector's challenges and provides opportunities to help our producers grow, innovate, and adapt. Got a couple of targeted priorities here that I'd like to share with you today. And one is continued improvement, support, and inflationary-based increases for existing specialty crop and land grant institution programs. And those are to increase base funding for ag research stations and cooperative extension, the specialty crop block grant program, the specialty crop research initiative, the value-added producer grants, and the IR4 project. We also encourage you to have increased focus on this in this Farm Bill on supporting producers' efforts to adapt to and increase resiliency to climate change, not just on mitigation. Specifically, in regard to sustainable water source development and irrigation.
The current Farm Bill expires at the end of September. That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's Livestock Report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, we told you last week that the National Milk Producers Federation said the plant-based beverage proposal from the Food and Drug Administration falls woefully short of ending the decades-old problem of misleading plant-based labeling using dairy terminology. Well, Chris Galen, NMPF Senior Vice President of Membership Services and Strategic Initiatives, recently talked about this on Dairy Radio Now.
Well, the latest is that the proposal that FDA put out that would basically do two things. Number one, it would still allow the use of dairy terms like milk, for products that are labeled as coming from plant sources, oat, soy, rice, etc. The other thing it would do, though, is to require these plant-based beverages to put nutritional information about what they contain or what they don't contain prominently on the label so that consumers would be better informed, hopefully, about what is missing from these plant-based products. As we've asserted for many years, where there is consumer confusion for all these fake dairy products and fake milks is people may think, well, they have an equivalent amount of protein, vitamins, minerals, because cow's milk is chock-a-block with all those things, but a lot of things that are labeled as oat milk or almond milk are really pale comparisons. So anyway, this is what FDA put out in a guidance. They wanted comments on it, and basically we told the agency in the comments that we submitted is that we don't like the idea of these plant-based products using the term milk. We're okay with the idea of the nutritional comparisons, but overall, this guidance as a package falls really short of what it needs to do, which is to protect the public health by providing real actionable information to consumers.
But because of the voluntary nature of the proposed guidance and FDA's undependable labeling enforcement history, Galen notes that NMPF continues its work in Congress to pass the Dairy Pride Act.
The Dairy Pride Act are identical bills in the House and the Senate that would require the FDA to enforce its own rules and the standards of identity defining not just milk, but other things like cheese, butter, yogurt, and ice cream. So we are going to continue to work with our supporters in the House and the Senate to pass the Dairy Pride Act because this legislation would force FDA to enforce standards of identities in ways that this draft guidance that they are taking comments on just simply wouldn't do.
Again, that was NMPF's Chris Galen. You can learn more about this on the National Milk Producers Federation website, nmpf.org. And we told you last week that overall pasture and rangeland conditions are starting to worsen a bit. Today, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey looks at drought coverage of hay and cattle areas.
First of all, hay production area in drought, 30%, down slightly from 32% at the beginning of the month. And then the U.S. cattle inventory in drought, the current number, 37% of the U.S. cattle inventory in drought, down 41% from June 27th.
That was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Why do you listen?
I just want to stay informed while I'm on the go.
News on the radio, it's nice because it's just a quick snippet and I don't have to go searching for it or grab a paper.
I listen to radio because anywhere that I'm going, I'm listening to music or I'm listening to a talk show or I'm just trying to stay up on current events.
I always turn into the radio to see if I need to take shelter, where it's hitting, to see what I need to be preparing for.
Why do you listen? Go to whyilisten.com, tell us why you listen, and you have a chance to win $500. Visit whyilisten.com today.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The August recess isn't a break for lawmakers, and farmers are encouraged to remember that. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Lawmakers from the House and Senate are on the annual August recess and back in their respective districts and states. Tom Donnelly, American Farm Bureau Federation Director of Grassroots Program Development, says lawmakers will spend that time hearing from voters.
So it's a great time for farmers and ranchers to meet with and communicate with lawmakers. This year is especially important since Congress is working to reauthorize the Farm Bill.
He says there are several ways to do so.
Make sure you sign up for a lawmaker's e-newsletter. That way you'll be informed when they're back in town, and you can even sign up for a town hall meeting and visit a county fair when they're there. And you can always schedule a meeting with lawmakers and staff. Also, don't forget, offer the opportunity to visit your farm or ranch.
Donnelly says forming a relationship with lawmakers can set farmers or ranchers up to be a resource for those elected officials well into the future. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullough. A big audit issue for the IRS is whether compensation amounts are reasonable for owners of small, closely held corporations, including farming and ranching ones. It's critical that owners of small, closely held corporations are paid reasonable compensation. It's a big audit issue for the IRS. In a recent case, a married couple were the sole shareholders of a corporation. The husband took a relatively modest salary for years, but then took a big increase in years 2013 to 2016 to compensate for those earlier years. The IRS challenged the higher amounts. The tax court looked at numerous factors to determine if his salary was reasonable. Those included his qualifications, the nature, extent, and scope of his work, the size and complexities of the business, the salaries of similar persons in similar businesses, and whether distributions to shareholders had been made. The tax court denied a deduction for the full amount of the compensation, and the decision was upheld on appeal. The temptation might be to set S-corporation compensation low so that self-employment tax is minimized, or set C-corporation salary high to generate a higher corporate-level deduction. The IRS and the courts have provided boundaries for compensation levels. Make sure to stay within those boundaries. This is one issue that IRS is paying close attention to. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen.
The old saying is true, knowledge is power, and the speed at which we're learning and adopting new technologies moves faster every day. In this report from Holstein Association USA, we hear from a dairy cattle nutritionist on how this really sparks progress on the farm. Bob Cervera has the story.
Just like elite athletes, dairy cows are fed a specialized diet to ensure they stay healthy and reach their potential. Many farmers rely on cattle nutritionists to strike a precise balance between feed rations and milk output. Technology is improving the process for everyone, says Megan Taylor, a nutritionist from Kentucky.
It's so wonderful for our industry to adapt and learn and utilize new technology. The more information I can get about the animal, about the feed that we're feeding, about how they're processing the feed, about the milk that's being produced, all those things make my job easier at the end of the day.
Megan speculates that dairy operations of all types and sizes need to adapt and rely on technology, especially in the next 5 to 10 years. Among the clients she works with is Western Kentucky University, which houses the Smart Holstein Lab, a collaborative effort between the university and Holstein Association USA.
Being able to be part of that and to kind of watch how the technology will unfold and how it's going to get utilized by more and more farms, it's a really neat thing to have here in Kentucky.
Like everything in farm management, there's no one-size-fits-all. WKU's Smart Holstein Lab is where companies determine which types of operations are best suited for their products.
Some of them are just very rural and may not have any Wi-Fi connectivity. And I mean, that's just a small example, but they're just all over the place. There's a broad spectrum. So all these different companies and devices are really, it's awesome to be aware of them and to see how we can utilize them at different farms.
Precision technology can be used in registered Holstein operations to make strides in milk production, improve reproductive outcomes, be more efficient with feed consumption, and more. Megan says this is the best part of her job as a dairy nutritionist.
What I enjoy most is definitely moving the mark. You know, the producer and I will set goals and kind of set a benchmark of where we want to be, and then we'll try to move that mark. And that is extremely rewarding for both myself and the farm.
For Holstein Association USA, I'm Bob Cervera.
A partnership for research. A groundbreaking ceremony for a new plant research facility features a partnership between USDA and land-grant university scientists that's well over 9 decades old. Rod Bain has more.
Joint research on plant science between USDA and a land-grant university. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and other USDA officials on the campus of Washington State University earlier this week at the groundbreaking ceremony for a new plant science building. One housing scientists from USDA's Agricultural Research Service and WSU. This is the latest collaboration in an over 90-year partnership between the two institutions, with research efforts at the new site focused on wheat, legumes, and dry land and irrigated farming. The secretary remains in the Pacific Northwest the remainder of the week, attending the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum in Seattle. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Irrigation in arid California is as complicated as it is essential. Unpredictable supplies, uneven distribution, complicated application schedules, and regulation make it a challenge. No wonder help with water is the biggest request at USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. Since 2014, NRCS has invested over $100 million helping over 1,000 California farmers conserve water. By using superior technology and savvy management, farmers get more crops with fewer drops. Join the Water Savings Club. Contact your local NRCS office. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Continued escalation of military action in the Black Sea region, this time Ukraine attacking Russia, and a major crop report this Friday headline our news to start the week. I'm Mark Oppold with your bottom line report, brought to you by Helena. Ukraine military turned the tables on Russia late week, a drone attack on a Russian port, closing it for a time, and damaging a cargo ship. This, coupled with this Friday's USDA crop report, provides temporary support, in our view, to the grain trade. More private corn estimates, though, flowing in, several over 177, bar chart reporting 178.4. That's almost a full bushel higher than USDA's July number, and it gives sellers ammunition to continue pushing lower, although we think last Thursday-Friday lows in corn, soybeans, and wheat are near-term lows until we see USDA numbers. This is the bottom line report. Coron Metra from Helena. You can manage your in-season nutrition with flexible applications of Coron Metra. Visit HelenaAgra.com to learn more. Watch October lean hogs to hold the $81 level here early week, but $84 offers stiff resistance. That's our bottom line to start the week. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day and a profitable week ahead.
Where to learn about aspects of our planet, its climate, and how it impacts our resources in real time, or through projections, both short and long?
Welcome to the new Earth Information Center.
The greeting from Bill Nelson, administrator of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, during the center's recent grand opening. NASA will oversee this complex with contributions and users from a myriad of sources, including the Agriculture Department.
We use NASA products every day in conducting our research.
And farmers.
We're going to have to produce a lot more food with a lot less resources out on our farm. And with NASA data, we can have the ability to do that.
I'm Rod Bain, USDA Agricultural Research Service Deputy Administrator Marlon Eve and Kansas farmer Dwayne Roth join us as we take a look at the Earth Information Center and how it could benefit ag. In this edition of Agriculture USA. The sounds of applause from dignitaries and participants at the recent ribbon-cutting ceremony of NASA's new Earth Information Center, located in Washington, D.C.
For more than 60 years, NASA has been using our vantage point of space to observe the Earth. And in just the last 6 months, NASA has launched a series of satellite missions, 4 missions.
With those missions involving the collection of climatic and Earth resource data. Yet as the administrator of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, Bill Nelson points out,
do folks really know how to access it?
Which is the reason behind the Earth Information Center.
The data ought to be more understandable. It ought to be more accessible. It ought to be more usable for everyone, everywhere.
That includes a real-time facility at NASA headquarters and virtually through a website at gis.earthdata, all one word, www.nasa.gov.
You're going to see real-time information that is being beamed to the Earth from dozens of spacecraft about a particular issue, and then you will see the hyperwall change, and it will give you additional data from other assets in space. And when you go on NASA.gov and get this virtually, you're going to be able to freeze the frame if that frame of the hyperwall is the information you're seeking and use that data.
In terms of what this data might mean for earthbound users,
homebuyers need information to assess flood risk. Businesses near the water need information on algae blooms. Farmers need to know where and when to plant crops, especially during a drought, or to know that a drought is coming, or to know that the rains, like a monsoon, are coming. Firefighters need data in order to manage wildfires. And the Earth Information Center can empower them. It's the first of its kind physical and virtual space to engage and to underscore NASA's Earth science impact.
Multiple federal partners are part of this endeavor, including the Agriculture Department. Agricultural Research Service Deputy Administrator Marlon Eve was among those participating in the EIC ribbon cutting ceremony.
We have a long history of partnering with NASA, of working with NASA data
in areas such as drought monitoring and land cover assessments.
ARS needs to be driving precision agriculture for all farmers, similar to the way that the Earth Information System needs to provide data and information to all Americans and to the global community. Working together, NASA and USDA and our other federal partners can really enable a new generation of agricultural production that's much more informed, data-driven, and precise.
Dwayne Roth is a fourth-generation Kansas farmer. He notes the importance of data for growers and ranchers to produce more food with less resources, and for conserving resources for future generations.
For instance, when to apply water, when to shut that water off, what crop to grow. I never thought before, when I have boots on the ground, that I'd be able to use satellites. Space helped me make better decisions. So that flow of technology that we're using, where we can measure water, we can quantify it, we can solve it. So we know that if we can predict, say, within a reasonable amount of what the temperature is going to be in the rain, we'll know when to be able to turn the pivot on, shut that pivot off. If we can just save a little bit of water on the front, a little bit of water on the end, that computes to millions of gallons of water.
This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the show. Today we're rounding out my conversation with Stanislaus County Farm Bureau's Anna Genasi and nursery owner Tim Roos, who's also part of Stanislaus County's Workforce Development Committee.
Let's kind of talk about what could those projects be that fit in this box. We all know that automation and robotics are becoming more integrated in farming, and you use this word, Tim, and Anna, you have used it before. It's upskilling and making sure that our skilled laborers now have the, you know, capacity to and the knowledge to run these robots that are helping them throughout the day. So could that be maybe a program as far as training folks with robotics that sort of fits into this box set out by, you know, the federal government?
Yeah, Danielle. So kind of the beauty of this sector partnership is the solutions are industry driven.
Okay.
So my job as kind of the go-between is to get the people in the room to identify where the gaps are. You know, we help facilitate those conversations. And then the room, you know, the folks in the room are able to say, gosh, I really need X, Y, and Z. And then the workforce development group goes back to the drawing board and figures out, okay, if they need X, Y, and Z, and we have this amount of money, what programs can we put X, Y, and Z into in order to fund or at least partially fund? So perfect example, we just renewed our contract with workforce development for year two. So we will hold those two meetings that encompass the entire industry as a whole. We're also holding two subsector meetings. One will be focused specifically for the nut industry, processors, really. And then the second one is for kind of aspiring PCAs. So we're inviting pesticide dealers. And the idea is that pesticide dealer X could bring on an intern under workforce development, where a portion of their salary is paid for. Workforce development would then help to, pay for training and education for that intern to then take their DPR licensing exams. And then once that intern has successfully passed their exams and has now stepped into a true pest control advisor role, workforce development has programs in which they will pay for another year, I think it is, a portion of the salary, because technically they're still training. Mm-hmm. And so it's a huge benefit to the employer, right? That they can bring somebody on, they can train them and groom them under their company culture and how they want a PCA to work within their company, help them successfully pass their exams. And now all along the way, that intern has now become employed as a PCA at a much higher salary level. So that's, mm-hmm. that's a perfect example of like a win-win-win, right? Right. And then with the almond processors or nut processors that we're bringing together, the hope is to identify, look, is there new technology that you guys have invested in that you now need your current employees trained on, because they're not hand sorting anymore. They're going to be, you know, running the machines that are doing mm-hmm. the automatic sorting, right? Mm-hmm. And workforce is willing to like even pay for the manufacturer of that technology to come out and do in-house training. So there's all kinds of opportunities, but as I said, it's a contract with the government. So you got to be willing to take the time to invest in getting that contract successfully executed. So it's not quick. Mm-hmm. So if folks are looking for something to happen tomorrow, this might not be your cup of tea, but if you're willing to invest the time, I think it can be really successful.
And I'll add to that and say that you know, there is no mold, there's rules to be followed. So once the mold is made, the momentum is there. And just as the curriculum for the supervisor program is now set and can be added to and improved, and you know, as things go forward, but the main bones and the meat and potatoes are there. And so to offer that class a second time is easier than the first time, mm-hmm. and it's understood, and it's measurable success that is good feedback to the development department as well. I would say the other thing too is with the meetings that we've had, the workforce staff has been part of those programs, and there has been, I can speak for the last meeting that we had, the industry came in, we had great feedback, we had a good lively discussion, and then one of the members of the staff got up and kind of went over a few programs that they had, so there has been give and take, and then after everybody went home, kind of the certain members of the Farm Bureau stayed behind with certain members of the staff, and then there was a feedback back and forth of kind of a recap of the meeting, mm-hmm. and likewise great things we were able to step forward in, and some of that was the intern programs that you guys are working on now. Hmm. So we're making good strides.
I think you mentioned that the federal government was looking for specific private industries or counties, but is this something that can be statewide? They just have to sort of tap into it and have a committee or a program developed, or is this just specific to Stanislaus County?
No, this is something that can be offered in any county. The opportunities are there. I'm not sure as far as the funding. Obviously, Stanislaus County, you know, as far as economy is not as successful as some of the others. And so there may be more opportunities in our county, but this is something that can be replicated in other counties. We just have a Farm Bureau here that is, we have with the workforce and Farm Bureau relationship that has taken off and has been so, in my opinion, successful. We've kind of taken those steps first before anyone else has.
Yeah, we've been a bit of a guinea pig.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stanislaus County is, for a lot of different things, which is great, because I feel like there's been a lot of success coming from your county, and folks who are listening, hopefully they get ideas and are excited by the trials and projects and programs that you guys have been a part of. It's been really neat, Anna, over the last, 2 years to listen and to chat with you and to watch the growth with Stanislaus County Farm Bureau and just the agriculture industry in that county from, my standpoint as somebody who just delivers the message of agriculture. As we sort of wrap up our conversations here, why is it important that we're talking about workforce development? So why is it important that we continue to develop and put back into our workforce within the agriculture industry here in California?
Well, Danielle, I'll say from an industry perspective, from a Farm Bureau perspective, our guys and gals, our farmers, ranchers, and dairymen are doing things here in this state that literally cannot be done anywhere else in the world, right? Mm-hmm. We are just in this really beautiful spot of climate, soil, and water that we are able to grow commodities here that are not being grown successfully anywhere else. And it makes us different. Our political scheme makes it challenging. But I just think there's this program in particular, I think is just a great testament to Farm Bureau identifying the needs of our members and pivoting to hit those needs. Mm-hmm. And it's going to mean continued partnership. It's going to mean having conversations across the aisle. We just hosted DPR, the director of DPR, Julie Henderson, was literally sitting in this room 2 weeks ago so that we, Farm Bureau, and some of our members had an opportunity to share with her the great and innovative things in regards to pesticide safety that our folks are doing. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we stop having those conversations or looking for new and innovative ways to do things, we're going to cease to exist. And I don't know if folks really understand the true economic impact that ag has on our state and what our state would look like without California agriculture. And that's why I just feel obviously passionate about serving our members.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say,
Tim, anything else to add to that?
Yeah, I would say from a small business standpoint, I'm the owner. My wife and I run the business together. We share a lot of the responsibilities that of everyday business. And so we rely heavily on the Farm Bureau. We rely on programs that communicate with us because it becomes difficult for I'm used to making day-to-day decisions. And mm-hmm. I don't always have time to be able to read through all of the labor laws and all of the regulation and to keep up with those things. And so I rely heavily on the Farm Bureau to be able to communicate with us. And we take part in the programs that they provide for us so that we can stay legal, so we can stay compliant, I guess is the word for it. And so these programs are very, very important for us. And the easier it is for us to participate, the more likely it is for us to have our feet in the room down at the Farm Bureau.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The Citrus Research Board and UC Agriculture and Natural Resources will be hosting the 41st Post-Harvest Pest Control Conference in September in Visalia. The technical one-day citrus conference is geared towards industry personnel, service company representatives, and packing house professionals, and will take place on September 6th at the Visalia Convention Center. Speakers will include personnel from the University of California, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the California Citrus Quality Council. The first presentation will take place at 9:15 with information about food safety, followed by a discussion on disease management. After lunch, there will be presentations on fruit quality maintenance, followed by trade pest management. Units will be applied for through the California Department of Pesticide Regulation for licensed categories PCA, QAL, and QAC. More information about the conference is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Young agricultural leaders win awards at the Ag Media Summit. During the 2023 Ag Media Summit in California, agricultural communication students were honored for their excellence, professionalism, and leadership. The Livestock Publications Council Student Award, sponsored by Alltech, provides travel sponsorships for four students to attend the AMS. Following a competitive application and interview process, Carly Winfrey of Texas Tech University won the LPC Forest Brasford Student Award. She's a senior currently pursuing a bachelor's degree in agricultural communications and minoring in political science. She says, quote, "In my future career, I want to help shape policy to best serve my people of rural America. My degree will allow me to walk through the halls of Congress and share the stories that rural America is so desperately needing to be told." Jenny Nori, Alltech's communications manager for North America and Europe, says, quote, "Alltech is proud to support the next generation of agricultural communicators as the ambassadors and voice of our industry." And AFB contributed to that report.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media, at Agnet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the Agnet News Hour from Agnet West. Agnet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.